Thank you, Blessing Njonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, June 17th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A local think tank director Ibo Mandaza says Zimbabwe's economic woes can only be solved by the renewal of the country's leadership, starting with President Robert Mugabe's immediate resignation.
But ZANU-PF lawmaker Patrick Joao dismisses Mandaza's assertions, saying there's no leadership crisis in the country.
This is not leadership crisis. This is actually a manifestation of a system of the rejuvenation of leadership, and that is good for the country.
And police raid the offices of a community radio station, Radio Kwelas, in Kwekwe, charging the station is operating illegally.
As I was trying to establish why they were there, that's when I was identified by one of the police details suggesting that I take a seat in the office and answer to questions. Before that, I was presented with a search warrant.
Director Ibo Mandaza of the Harare-based think tank Surface Trust today called on President Robert Mugabe to retire as soon as possible, saying this would resolve most of the country's problems and create a platform to jumpstart Zimbabwe's ailing economy. He was speaking at a meeting organized by the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition in the capital. Thomas Chiripasi has more details.
Speaking at a meeting of civil society organizations, political parties, and representatives of the international community to find ways to address issues plaguing the country's economy, Dr. Mandaza said Zimbabwe's biggest problem is leadership.
We need a new leadership in this country. And if those of us who are older have failed, then you need to tell us we've failed. And in doing so, tell us what can be done among yourselves.
Mandaza's sentiments were echoed by MDCT legislator for Warren Park, Elias Mudzuri, who also sits in the opposition party's National Executive Committee.
Talk of the president of America, if you talk of Russia, any candidate who is the president is the last man. All these institutions fall down to be administered by the last office. So that last office matters. So all our failure should be looked at in the sense of if we change the last man. If we haven't, then the last man must look at himself and say, what am I doing?
But ZANU-PF Central Committee member Patrick Joao, also in attendance, said leadership change was not an option.
The two main parties in the country, ZANU-PF and the MDCT, are going towards elective congresses. And it is normal that there will be contestations for certain positions. In ZANU-PF, for example, there is no contestation over the issue of the president because the president was only elected not just as president of ZANU-PF, but president of the country less than a year ago. I'm a member of the ZANU-PF Central Committee, so I must make sure that I go out to the ground to make sure that I get re-elected. It is normal. This is not leadership crisis. This is actually a manifestation of a system of the rejuvenation of leadership, and that is good for the country.
Although the MDCT says it is the only viable option for the country, Joao said the opposition party is finished.
The MDC was formed out of the National Constitutional Assembly, and that is a fact. And if you now look at how the MDC is collapsing, it is simply collapsing because the raison d'etre for the MDC ceases to exist. It's simple. Look at history. History is quite instructive.
Joao also said, contrary to popular sentiments, there is no power tussle between Vice President Joyce Mujuru and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa as President Mugabe's succession question rages on. The EU's top diplomat in Zimbabwe, Ambassador Aldo De La Risha, said his bloc is ready to re-engage Zimbabwe.
Lucky we don't have a leadership crisis in this country. We still have a leader who manages to keep at bay and under control these forces that are very much contradictory. Second point, you are talking about Zimaset, but I have the impression that you are bashing Zimaset as if it was a development policy. Zimaset is just a blueprint. It's work in progress. And they are calling on the African Development Bank in particular in order to provide that technical assistance that would permit to go from a blueprint to a development strategic document.
Some economists blame Zimbabwe's economic downturn on the land reform program of 2000. They argue that since then, the country's economy has been tinkering on the brink with very little production going on the former commercial farms. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, economists are warning the government to take a cue from Japan's decade-long fight to end deflation by implementing policies that deal with problems in purchasing local goods to ensure things do not spiral out of control and cause further havoc to struggling ordinary Zimbabweans. Blessing Zulu has more.
The latest figures released by the Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency, or ZIMSTAT, show that the country has entered its fourth month grappling with deflation. This has resulted in companies reducing the price of goods as people are failing to buy. Some firms have been forced to cut back production or close shop altogether. The Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries says industrial capacity utilization has fallen to about 30%. In a press statement, ZIMSTAT says latest figures show that the annual inflation for May was 0.19%, gaining 0.07 percentage points in the April rate of minus 0.26% as the drop in prices slowed down when compared to last year. Harare-based independent economist Best Doro says the country's failure to access capital injection is to blame for the deflationary pressures.
The issue really revolves around lack of liquidity. So as a result, aggregate demand is not there. And because of that, prices naturally are going down significantly. And this has been going on for quite some time.
Former finance minister and leader of Mavambo Kusile Don opposition party, Simba Makoni, concurs. He adds, however, that the problem is political.
The economy has been in free fall for a long time, and the reasons for that at a technical level are many, but broadly it's because of the politics of our country and the fact that the government isn't offering solutions.
Makoni says Zimbabweans must brace themselves for more economic problems.
Well, it means what the average Zimbabwean has been facing for the last decade and a half, that there's more hardship, that families will struggle more to put food on the table, to send children to school, to put clothes on their back. In general, that people are getting poorer and poorer very rapidly.
But resource exploitation chief economist Washington Mehlomakulu says what is called deflation by some economists might be an economy in self-correction after prices had been too exaggerated.
The most debatable element is that of price correction, because there is a thinking in this country that what we are seeing as deflation is actually reflective of price correction, especially with tangible goods, such as food and non-alcoholic items in the inflation basket, which tend to be transitionary in nature. And this is underpinned by the relationship between the US dollar, which is the main currency of exchange in Zimbabwe right now, vis-a-vis the weaker rand.
But what can be done to address deflation that has forced some companies to close shop or to retrench workers? Doro says it is going to be a tough act for Harare as it has no capacity to print money. Director of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, Dr. Godfrey Kanyenze, agrees with Doro. He says the government should, more importantly, quickly mend ties with the West.
If we had money coming from overseas development assistance, that could also help. But in the current situation where there is no real re-engagement that has been concluded, then it implies, therefore, that we continue in a situation where the overseas development assistance is off budget and is targeting humanitarian assistance. So it implies, therefore, that it cannot be used by government to basically stimulate aggregate demand in the economy. We cannot talk about investment because investment is depressed, whether it's local or foreign direct investment. So that is basically the challenge.
All these economists agree that Zimbabwe will continue to experience deflation over the coming years. They urge Harare to carefully study Japan's struggles with deflation, saying lessons from the Asian country would greatly assist Zimbabwe as it goes forward. Deflation hit Japan in the early 1990s, and it is still struggling with the after effects more than two decades later. The economists say Zimbabwe, saddled with a huge external debt, political instability, and strained ties with the West, will in the meantime continue to struggle as the economy falters. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington.
Police today raided Radio Kwela's offices in Kwekwe, saying the community radio station is operating illegally. Officers in the company of the CID officer in charge, soldiers from the president's office, and law and order officers are charging that the radio station does not have a broadcasting license. According to the Media Institute of Southern Africa, MISA Zimbabwe, the police arrived with a search warrant at 10 a.m. and started dismantling all the studio equipment and taking CD productions that Radio Kwela's has produced. Radio Kwela's representative Irene Kalulu, who was present during the raid, informed MISA Zimbabwe that the police indicated that their production of CDs is a violation of the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, IPA, and the Broadcasting Services Act, BSA. Kalulu also said the police also alleged that the Community Radio Initiative is broadcasting indirectly. Studio 7 spoke to Radio Kwela's board chairman, Howard Masaninga, who says he was surprised when he arrived at the office to be greeted by the police armed with a search warrant.
I just happened to pass by the Radio Kwela's offices to see how the secretariat were going about their business. And just like that, I found the office packed with about 10 police details, 9 males and 1 female. And as I was trying to establish what had happened or why they were there, that's when I was identified by one of the police details, suggesting that I take a seat in the office and also answer to questions they were posing. Before that, I was presented with a search warrant.
What were some of the questions that police were interested in asking you?
Actually, they were saying to me, you are broadcasting without a license. In that regard, you are violating the Broadcasting Services Act.
Are you broadcasting?
No.
What exactly, as a community radio station, are you doing?
Actually, from the onset, as a radio initiative, and also given the prevailing environment in Zimbabwe with regard to community radio broadcasting, there haven't been any calls for application. And as such, after having set up our initiative as a community radio project, we were training our staff in preparation for broadcasting.
Radio Kwela's board chairman Howard Masaninga on the line from Kwekwe with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
In the last part of our interview with African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, we look at Agenda 2063. Africa has recently launched a strategy aiming to optimize the use of Africa's resources for the benefit of all Africans in terms of development. Agenda 2063 is encouraging discussion among all stakeholders on how the continent should effectively learn from the lessons of the past, build on progress now underway, and strategically exploit all possible opportunities available in the short, medium, and long term to ensure positive socio-economic transformation within the next 50 years. This is what the AUC chair had to say of Agenda 2063.
Agenda 2063 is really bringing together all the national plans that we have and the ideas from ordinary people from different sectors about the Africa we want in 2063. And we've heard lots of ideas from people, and now we have to start working on those ideas. But basically, we want to dream and to plan away from the here and now. Because if you're always thinking about the here and now, you will be very constrained about what you think is possible. One of the things is that we need a skills revolution. We don't have enough skills on the continent. We don't have enough engineers. We don't have enough town planners. We don't have enough researchers. We don't have enough innovators. We don't have enough electricians, plumbers, and so on. You can have money, you can have minerals, but if you don't have skilled people to figure out what to do, then you won't grow. The second thing is we have to build our infrastructure so that we can move people and goods. Our people are crying for opening up of the borders so that they can move freely. Students are saying they want harmonization of curricula so they can study anywhere and work anywhere, which is really integration. And we are looking at modern infrastructure, energy, hydro, solar, wind. Of course, still some fossil fuel will still be used as well. We're looking at modernizing our agriculture and industrializing as well. And of course, we think this cannot happen at development. And at the end of the day, we really want a modernized Africa, a prosperous Africa, a peaceful Africa.
Why does Africa have to wait for 2063? What does that mean?
Not about waiting, it's about starting now. But it just allows you imagine what you want in 50 years. Because if you are going to be looking at 5 years, you are going to be worried about the next election, you will not have a long view.
And that was African Union Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma on the line from London.
Thirty young Zimbabweans landed in various parts of the United States at the weekend to participate in the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, initiated by U.S. President Barack Obama in 2010. The young Zimbabweans were picked from a record 1,500 applicants from all parts of the country, representing different professional backgrounds, including business, media, technology, civil society, health, and arts. For the next 6 weeks, the participants will receive training in civic leadership and entrepreneurship at 20 of America's top universities. Studio 7 reporter Tatenda Kumbo spoke with Nomen Mukwakwami, one of the 2014 YALI members who is spending his time at the University of California, Berkeley, focusing on public policy. Mukwakwami is an engineer and research coordinator at the Center for Natural Resource Governance. He tells reporter Tatenda Kumbo he's excited by the opportunity.
The people are very helpful. We already had phones ready for us so that we could contact people back home and tell them that we arrived safely. We were able to be shown around. I think it's been wonderful reception so far.
And of course, by trade, you are an engineer. What will you be doing at UC Berkeley in regards to maximizing your professional career?
I am a mining engineer, but I'm working in civil society in natural resource governance, which I think still applies to mining because we're looking at issues and how mining affects the economy, how it affects the communities, and how it affects the environment. UC Berkeley and California in particular is an area where the environment is taken into a lot of consideration. And I think UC Berkeley has high standards in terms of conserving the environment. And we're going to be having classes on public policy. We're going to have community visits where we can actually be taking part in community service.
And although you have only been here for a few days, what do you hope to gain from this experience?
I think the most important thing is networking, being able to meet fellow Africans from different nations.
That was YALI fellow Nomen Mukwakwami in Berkeley, California.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America.
As the mail business continues to decline, the designated national postal operator, Zimpost, says it's diversifying its operations and offering other services that will substitute losses from declining mail revenue. Ivan Chifera reports.
Launching its brand repositioning strategy dubbed Zimpost Beyond the Envelope, Douglas Mbango, Zimpost Managing Director, said the advent of information and communication technologies has seen the mail business decline by 86%.
We have not sat on our laurels over time. Whilst we're losing volumes to technology, we have come up with other services that we believe will substitute lost revenues from declining mail volumes.
As a result, Zimbango said, Zimpost is diversifying to provide clients with postal, courier, communication, financial and agent services. He said some of the financial services offered by Zimpost include Zipcash, a money transfer service that allows customers to send money locally and internationally. Zimbango said, apart from providing services to other mobile money services, such as EcoCash, One Wallet and Western Union, among others, at its more than 250 post offices throughout the country, ZimPost will be launching a new financial service that will allow customers of all banks in the country to withdraw money from its outlets. He explains the new product, the financial switch, will make life easy, particularly for rural bankers.
Take banking, for example. Irrespective of which bank you bank with, you can take advantage of our branch network to go and swipe with your card and then take money from the post office. It will also enable us to cash Master and Visa card, process payroll transactions, affect all the financial services that you can think of.
Some of the services offered by ZimPost include retail services for stationery, ICT products, printing and photocopying, real estate, agent services for various companies such as the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation and Zinara, among others. Zimbango said with this rebranding exercise, ZimPost has a bright future and expects the company to start making a profit from 2015.
What I can tell you is that ZimPost will never die. As long as other businesses are ticking, then we'll tap into those businesses. We actually encourage the development of e-commerce because we are there to do the physical delivery. We buy things over the net will not deliver. ZimPost will be there to deliver. So we'll leverage on technology to move forward.
He said, despite difficulties experienced in the economy, the state-owned company has managed to stay afloat and has not approached the government for financial assistance. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, international online payment platform PayPal became officially available to Zimbabweans for the first time today, enabling online shoppers to buy goods from such multinational sites such as eBay and others. PayPal made the announcement yesterday, saying it was also opening up its services to 9 other countries in Africa, Europe, and South America, including Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and Cameroon. In the case of Zimbabwe, for now, buyers are not yet able to use the facility to buy stuff from the local markets. Tech expert Limbigani Makani tells us the coming of PayPal to Zimbabwe is a big deal.
I think it's a very good development, both on the consumer side and on PayPal side, because that means PayPal has access to some 5 million internet users in Zimbabwe and in the other 3 countries on the continent. But in terms of the consumers, that means they can buy stuff off websites like eBay and off some other websites that exclusively use the PayPal means of payment. In terms of the country, I'm not clear what the effect will be, what the net effect will be, but currently the problem is that PayPal is only allowing consumers in these new countries to buy things that are not in Zimbabwe. So obviously that means some outflow of money in an economy where the Reserve Bank and generally the government is discouraging money that is going out. So it's not clear how the country will receive this and what the impact will be.
Given our economic situation, do you think many people are going to take up this facility?
I think what we have to understand is that PayPal is primarily an internet payment service. Now, Zimbabwe is, and other African countries actually, is unique in that what has really made a big difference in these economies is mobile payments, those payments that are via mobile phones like EcoCash, like TeleCash, like NetOne's One Wallet. So PayPal doesn't come to have the same high impact that it has had in developed economies. What people use most in Zimbabwe, in any African country, is the mobile payments. So you'll find that these will still have the high traffic that they have, small amounts being transferred between people, peer-to-peer payments. And as you have probably noticed, some websites are starting to accept payment in the form of EcoCash and TeleCash. So these will remain the dominant ones, the ones that are within the country. PayPal, however, will ease the situation for those that want to buy things, say, on eBay and other websites outside Zimbabwe. That's relatively a small number when compared to the number of transactions that take place in Zimbabwe.
Tech Zim website founder and tech expert Limbigani Makani in Harare. We asked economic analyst Masimba Kuchera how PayPal will impact trade in Zimbabwe.
Well, what it means for the economy is not much. There's not much traffic in terms of online shopping by Zimbabweans. It's not something that Zimbabweans ordinarily do. But in terms of perception, it may be sending a signal that maybe Zimbabwe is a bit more secure now for PayPal. Let us also remember that amongst those African countries are countries like Nigeria, which have also been included in that. And I think PayPal was mainly looking at the security aspect. For the consumers, it just means that it's another online option to maybe buy goods from outside the country using that facility. It may take time to see what the results of that are, but I don't think there will be any significant inducement into the economy or any significant injection of any money into the economy through PayPal saying that it's coming to town.
And that was economic analyst Masimba Kuchera in Harare.
And in our World Cup update today, Algeria, the fifth African team to play in Brazil, was upset 2-1 by Belgium after two late goals. Only Cote d'Ivoire so far is the only African team that has won in Brazil. In today's big match, Brazil plays Mexico. The host nation escaped with a victory in the opening game of the tournament last Thursday after a lackluster performance. For more on the World Cup, Marvelous Mhlanganyawe turned to VOA sports correspondent Nico Pino, who's in Brazil.
This is Nico Pino, live from Manaus in Brazil for the World Cup 2014.
Nico, we see the African teams have been playing in the World Cup, but they haven't been doing so well. What's the sentiment on the ground there in Brazil?
There is a huge disappointment right now in Brazil. Last night, we saw the game, Ghana versus USA, and the Black Stars lost the game against Americans. It was a tough game, and earlier in the day, Nigeria, the Super Eagles, cannot win against Iran, which was supposed to be an easy one for them. And we're going to wait tomorrow. You're going to have the game of Cameroon. If Cameroon does not win the game against Croatia, they're going to be out. So right now, we all expect a new game, Algeria versus Belgium. Right now, it's going to be today, 1 p.m. local time, Belo Horizonte. And we're going to see what the Algerians are going to do. But we have mixed feelings about African teams, and hopefully for the games, they're going to play better.
And there's also the big match. The host, Brazil, will also play Mexico today. What is the sentiment on the ground like?
Huge expectation, obviously, because everybody is waiting for Brazil to win and to qualify for the next round. Everybody remember the game against Croatia and two goals from Neymar, the star here in Brazil. So the game is going to be at 4 p.m. local time, and you're going to see people in the bars, in the street, watching the game like they did last time. And for 2 hours, believe me, everything's going to stop in Brazil. Everybody's going to watch the game, but it's not going to be an easy one because Mexico won his first game against Cameroon, and they're in the same situation. If Mexican team win the game, they will obviously be qualified for the next round. So it's not going to be easy for Brazil.
That was a VOA sports correspondent Nico Pino in Brazil. Tune in to Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Our topic today is World Cup.
Just a quick reminder to our listeners that Studio 7 is now available on Channel Zim on your WizTech free-to-air decoder from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Monday to Friday and from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. From your WizTech decoder, look for CH Zim. Channel Zim is available 24/7 on your satellite TV, smartphone, and online. To listen online, go to www.channelzim.net.
Also, just to remind you, the listeners, that our mailbag is still alive and kicking and waiting for your emails. So please shoot at studio7@voanews.com. The address once again, studio7@voanews.com. You can also call our hotline on +1 202-205-9942 and dial 11 when the phone is answered to leave us your voice message, which we can play on air. The number once again is +1 202-205-9942 and then dial 11 to leave your message.
And before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories.
Local think tank director Ibo Mandaza says Zimbabwe's economic woes can only